We interrupt our regular program for this special event.
All systems are go at this time.
It's time for the kickoff.
30 seconds.
Standing by. Okay, listen up.
Get ready for the ride of your life.
Live and local from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station.
Number one.
We are number one.
1037 The Game.
KLWB. Karen Crone Lafayette.
Let's get down to it.
And this is Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 1037 The Game.
And live online at 1037thegame.com.
Is that who I think it is?
The wild, the weird, and the wonderful.
Hell yeah.
And now let's get started.
Happy Thursday to you.
And it is a Thursday, November 21 edition of Bumper to Bumper Sports. Ready to roll live from the Taproom River Ranch. And always glad to have you on 103.7 The Game. Ben Love starting my weekend early at the Tap Room, the famous Clint D, for this next 3 hours that we'll have a personal tour for you. He joins in the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. A lot of fun topics today. LSU's favored by 44-plus points, so we'll spend some time on the Tigers to be certain, but we've got some other areas that we need to explore, some other fields to roam in. So we'll get you ready for the second week of the high school football playoffs. We'll talk a lot of Raging Cajuns today, even on the recruiting side. However, I must lead off and put the focus back on the 8-2 New Orleans Saints. Big weekend in the NFC. Plenty of talk on this today as well. Seattle is at Philly. You've got San Francisco hosting Green Bay. The Rams, Monday Night Football, home against the Ravens, and the Cowboys on the road at the Patriots. What is my point? A lot of teams that are jockeying for a position with New Orleans to get into the NFC playoffs, to have a bye in the first week, and then to have home field advantage, they've all got big games this weekend. Chances for some of those teams to have their second, third, and fourth losses of the year. If the Saints, 9.5-point favorites with Carolina coming to the Superdome this Sunday, can hold serve and get the 9-2, they're going to be looking good. And they're going to be in a really nice spot if they can get through this weekend and then a Thanksgiving Thursday night at the home of the Dirty Birds, 10-2, before San Fran comes to town. That is exactly the way Houdat Nation wants to see it go down. And here's how I think you should start looking at this Saints-Panthers game. It's one where some of the usual suspects are going to play their normal roles. Certainly at the tip-top, Michael Thomas. Some people saying he belongs in the MVP discussion this year. Alvin Kamara, no longer on the injury report. Not even a smidge, not even limited. He's ready to roll. And then obviously Drew Brees back to full health after missing 5-plus games before the Arizona Cardinals and then the bye week earlier this month. And so all of that, hey, you probably knew. Here's something that maybe you didn't. Released within the last 15 minutes, the Saints injury report from this Thursday. 4 Saints did not practice. On the offensive line, Andres Pete still out dealing with the forearm. In the secondary, Marshon Lattimore didn't practice today dealing with that hamstring. Deontay Harris, starting punt returner with a hammy, didn't practice as well. And finally, fullback Zach Line with the knee injury. When it comes to line, that just gives you one less option when you get into tight quarters and you get near the goal line. The other 3 are going to have further reaching implications. No Deontay Harris means in all probability another week of AK-41 returning punts. No chance. That's a long-term solution. I agree with our guests that have come on the program this week, but I think you will have to have one more week of plugging the leak in the dam. And so look for Alvin Kamara to be back returning punts yet again against the Panthers. I think probably the biggest absence is Marshon Lattimore with that hamstring. And again, this continues to put more shine and focus on former New York Giant Eli Apple. And it is almost an exclusive Ohio State Buckeye secondary. Apple, trying to earn some money past this year, has been tremendous for Dennis Allen's defense. He's going to be, I think, the lead corner, it looks like. And against Carolina, what does that mean? Well, it's not as daunting a task as at Tampa with Jameis throwing it all over the field and the likes of Mike Evans and Chris Godwin running around. against Carolina, you've got Kyle Allen back there peppering footballs and having mixed success. But it is going to mean a one-on-one matchup with DJ Moore, who's been targeted 10-plus times, two out of the last 3 weeks, a talented receiver, and he's been the safety blanket, more so than tight end Greg Olsen, for this youngster, Kyle Allen. And so with Marshawn Lattimore not practicing today, I think the signs are pointing toward him being limited if he can go at all on Sunday. Look for Eli Apple, Patrick Robinson, and this kind of retooled Saints secondary sans Lattimore to have to take on DJ Moore first and Curtis Samuel second. Of course, none of that includes starting running back Christian McCaffrey. That's going to be more of a linebacker and safety concern, but we'll get to that later. Andres Pete out. It's also important. That means more Nick Easton, we would imagine. A bit of a surprise that it was Easton and not former LSU Tiger Will Clapp taking the place of Pete. But again, like Lattimore out, putting that focus more on Apple, Pete out. If that's going to be the case again as he's dealing with a forearm injury, you're going to have to go against a very vaunted pass rush of the Carolina Panthers. Ron Rivera's group, number one in the NFL in sacks during this 2019 season. And so last week, being without Pete, it meant you had to pick things up in terms of run blocking. Tampa, number one in the league against the run prior to last week. It's Oppo like Taco this week. And so Easton and company, they're going to have to defend against a really good pass rush. And so those are your four Saints that did not practice today. How about four more that were limited? And the offensive line is where this team seems to be most beat up. I told you Pete didn't practice today. How about two more usual starters that were limited on this Thursday? Offensive tackle Ryan Ramczyk dealing with a knee injury. Offensive guard Larry Warford, a thigh injury. And you've also got kind of an extended member of that family. Your sixth offensive lineman, Josh Hill, tight end, didn't go today, or I should say was limited, with a concussion. So this Saints team, like everybody, once you get toward Thanksgiving and start to turn the calendar close to it into December, everybody's dealing with some injuries. How do you respond to it? The next men up in the secondary on the offensive line, how are they going to perform? And then finally, the biggest question, anytime you take on the modern-day Carolina Panthers, what is your game plan for Christian McCaffrey? I alluded to the former Stanford back earlier. Let me end this open as we focus on the Saints-Panthers matchup, honing in on Christian. Run CMC. He is unbelievable. For my money, the best back in the league today. It's running it. It's catching it. It's lining up in the slot. He has a lot of the same skills that Kamara does. His team just relies on him more heavily. And without Cam Newton, Carolina's had to. I will tell you, I am more than okay with a game plan from Dennis Allen that includes forcing somebody else to beat you. Force Kyle Allen to beat you with those receivers I just talked about. With typical Saints killer Greg Olsen playing in his 114th season in the NFL, force those guys to beat you. I'm willing to bet they can't do it consistently. A blind squirrel will find a nut, but you ain't getting full off that. I think if you let McCaffrey get going early, this thing could snowball on you. And there's no way, after the Falcons debacle of 2 weeks ago, that you need to let any bad energy in that building. So Christian McCaffrey, all eyes will be on him in this ball game. I'm interested to see how the Saints treat him. Are they going to spy on him with DeMario Davis? Do they spy on him with some other players, maybe in the secondary, some of these safeties that are coming down? There are so many things that you need to be concerned with. He's that good. He's that versatile. All right, big program today. In about 4 minutes, Billy Embody, go247.com, will join us. A different twist than you're used to. We're going to be almost exclusively talking Raging Cajuns football recruiting. It's a great class of 2020 that's stockpiling right now for Billy Napier and company. Billy Embody will discuss it when we return. Slated to talk with Gordy Rush, LSU football sideline reporter at Straight Up 5 o'clock. 5:45, Dan McDonald, a Louisiana Sports Hall of Famer. We'll talk Raging Cajuns on the field. And then from 6 to 6:30, Blaine Viator will join me, and we're talking week two of the high school football playoffs. Big show on a Thursday. Stick around. After this brief timeout, we'll be right back to the Tap Room River Ranch with more Bumper to Bumper Sports.
gridiron debates never go out of style on Bumper to Bumper Sports. But feel free to be right anytime you're ready to start on 103.7 The Game.
No debate here. We'll be rocking with the best when it comes to recruiting in Louisiana. And that's no slight to some of our favorites on the program. Shane Dixon joins us every Tuesday. We love kicking it with our guy Mike Scarborough. We'll have a lot of our rowdy friends aboard, Sam Spiegelman. But this next man, he covers it all. And that includes UL. The Raging Cajuns right now with the number one recruiting class in the Sun Belt Conference, number 65 nationally. We're going to dig into some of the commits and even more tantalizing for a lot of the Vermilion and White fans, three targets that are on the board right now. Let's bring aboard the Ardco Equipment Hotline. Hey, he's firmly committed to our program right now. It's Billy Embody, go247.com. Billy, it's great to have you. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Life is good, and I want to get to the top-rated prospect currently committed to the Raging Cajuns, and that would be athlete Caleb Anderson from East Feliciana High School. What can you tell us about him and where he projects at the college level?
Yeah, he's a player that plays quarterback right now for East Feliciana. Just wrapped up his senior year, and he's really somebody that is just so versatile, so athletic, somebody that can really play safety or corner, but's probably going to end up at corner at the next level for UL. And really, they love his length. They love his size and his ability to run. He runs about a 4.5, and he's got a 37-inch vert. So, I mean, this is somebody who's really explosive. And that's one thing that Billy Napier and his staff have done really well is they go out and get great athletes and get them on the field and put them in positions to succeed. And that's somebody that they identified really early on, and they're going to have to hold on to him here. Utah is kind of circling him as somebody that they want to push for. They just had him on as for an official visit, and Virginia hosted him over the summer as well. Now, UL still has a chance to host him, and they'll be fighting off some of the big boys for him.
Let's stay in state, and Billy, you know this. The Raging Cajuns have a number of freakish wide receivers in terms of size and ability, and they've got a commitment from one, Kyron Lacey, 6'3", 207, from Thibodaux High School. What could you tell us about Kyron and his latest?
Yeah, this is another one that has blown up, and it's just a credit to their staff and what they're doing in terms of evaluation, because he's now, I mean, poised to really jump up. I wouldn't be surprised if he's going to be a top 100 wide receiver nationally. Like you said, 6'3", 207, Miami's offered him, and a lot of other bigger programs are keeping an eye on him after the season he had over at Thibodaux. And look, I mean, as these bigger programs kind of get involved, I think the big thing for UL is that they were on him early, and they really built, I think, a lot of trust with Kyron and how they're going to develop him and how they're going to take care of him and develop him as a player and as a person. And that's something that's really kind of stood out to me when talking with some people around his camp. And so I think Kyron is somebody that they're once again going to have to fight for down the stretch, which is a good thing. That's kind of what you want in a way. You want your commits to be wanted by other people. That means you're doing a good job of evaluating. So Kyron's one of those, and it wouldn't shock me to see him end up maybe as the highest rated commit in the class.
We're visiting with Billy Embody, go247.com. He covers the entire state of Louisiana, and that means this Raging Cajuns class as well. Billy, 17 total commits. You just ran down two of them. Let's do one more, and we'll leave the state of Louisiana. Imani Bailey, a running back from Denton, Texas, is pledged. With so much talent in this year's backfield, Napier, Rob Sale, they've got to replenish that.
Yeah, absolutely. And so they've got Bailey on board. 5'9", 200 pounds, so really well-built running back. Kind of reminds me a little bit of Clyde Edwards-Helaire, but I think he's, you know, potentially a little bit faster. He's an 11.04 100-meter guy. He anchored both their 4x1 and 4x200 relays, and long jumped as well for Denton Ryan out of Texas. But this is somebody that is going into this weekend's playoff game against Lubbock Coronado over in Texas. He's got a chance to top the 1,000-yard mark for the third straight season, but this season he's averaging 12.7 yards per carry, which is actually just to do that at that level in the Texas high school football ranks is unbelievable. And he's somebody that has kind of risen up the rankings a little bit, but for some reason he's just kind of flown under the radar offer-wise. And he has a chance to come in and play right away and contribute in a big way.
All right, Billy, don't sugarcoat it. Before we get to some of these targets, you've covered Louisiana and Texas high school football. Which set of playoffs is more intense?
Oh, man, that's not good. I think when you get into the later rounds, it's kind of tough to just compare with what Texas does with, 60,000, people going to state championship games and things like that. It's kind of tough. But, I think there's more rivalry and a little bit more long-standing hate maybe when you get into some of these long-time playoff powers getting together in Louisiana. I think there's a little bit more of an edge in that regard. It's kind of more like watching a mini pro league in the state of Texas, whereas like Louisiana is probably more college, a lot more passion and things like that. But I think that's probably the way to compare it, I think.
Future politician Billy Embody with us on 103.7 The Game. But that was really well done. I appreciated it. Let's go to a couple of the targets that Napier and company are looking at. One of them is currently committed to Frank Wilson and UTSA. And a lot of people listening to this show know that Frank could be under fire over there in San Antonio, so maybe this young man becomes available naturally. But Keelan Burrell, an outside linebacker from Helen Cox, what can you add to that situation?
Yeah, Keelan's somebody who really started off as a highly, highly rated prospect, but he's had a really good senior year. I like this tape. He's just kind of a sawed-off linebacker, 6 foot, 205, and somebody that I think is one to watch for sure if a decision is made and Frank is out over at UTSA. But Louisiana, they've hosted him for a couple of visits and had him on campus quite a bit. So they're already in a good position to kind of bring him on board if you're late in the class. Colorado is one, and there's a few other teams out there that are kind of circling around. But Keelan is one that I could definitely see ending up in the class potentially.
We'll come down the stretch with Billy Embody, and let's get to two junior college players that UL has its sights set on. We'll go back to the running back position. LaDainian Webb, currently plying his trade at Jones County Junior College, another running back in this class. What are the chances of him landing Webb?
Yeah, they've got to fight off Ole Miss. I think that's one that is looking to take a running back and really seems to have prioritized him. Matt Luke was out to watch him last week, and I think for LaDainian, he's got a chance to play right away. And when you're a JUCO, you've got to make the most of it. And you've got to be able to be in a place where you can come in and play right away. And so with Ole Miss having Jerrion Ealy, I think maybe that hurts them a little bit. And this is a player that can absolutely play at the highest levels of college football. And UL's done a good job getting in there and recruiting him and making him a priority. And we'll see how things kind of pan out with him. But, yeah, a 5'8", 190-pound back. He was pretty highly rated at coming out of high school and in the state of Alabama. I remember covering his recruitment just a little bit, but he's a big time back, and they need an older guy, I think, to come in and kind of help out replenishing that as well.
Billy, we'll finish with a JUCO defender with plenty of size, Ron Tatum, Northeastern Oklahoma A&M. How about 6'5", 265, listed as a strong side defensive end prospect? My guess is that Ron Roberts in that defense could put him in a lot of different places.
Yeah, his versatility is a plus, and he could play some defensive tackle, and he could play some defensive end, depending on what you're running, what you're putting out there on the field. But Oklahoma signed him out of college, or signed him out of high school in the state of Oklahoma, and it didn't work out there for Ron and Lincoln, but he was a top 100 overall prospect in the country. He's got plenty of talent. He was an All-American. He's got good size, good first step, all of those things. And for some reason, it just didn't work out at Oklahoma. But UL was really one of his offers that really got on him early after the first four games came out for him this fall. And so they've been on it for a while. Wouldn't be surprised at all if they're in a really good spot to land him. But, yeah, the junior college down the stretch is something to really watch for UL. I know we talked about Keelan, but they've got a lot of older guys they're looking at to kind of help replenish talent and continue to try to bring in guys that can compete and contribute right away.
As always, Billy, you're the best. Just a wealth of information. I hope that some of the pertinent stuff to your life, like passwords and codes to get into things, I hope that you remember those things, because you got a lot of other things stored in that noggin.
I keep them written down across the house.
keep doing your thing, man. We'll be following at go247.com. Thanks, Billy.
Thanks, Ben. Appreciate it.
And now you've got the drop on how to rob the InBody house. The man's passwords and codes are just written down around the house. You just got to get into the house, find those things, and, you know, no more Fort Knox. Basically, his treasure is yours. But that was gold, and I'm glad he shared it with us. I will tell you, that's the one thing I miss. Me and my man Shay Dixon, not doing On the Trail anymore Saturday mornings. Maybe we'll bring that back one day. But dedicated recruiting that also covers the Raging Cajuns. And Billy doing a really good job of that. And so a strong look, in my opinion, at the number one class in the Sun Belt, top 65 class in the country, and they're looking to add to those 17 hard commits that are already in the boat. So our thanks again to Billy InBody. When we return, haven't talked any LSU football yet. We will change that. I'm curious how much you care, how much you give a hoot about Joe Burrow's numbers this Saturday in a lopsided game we all expect against Arkansas. Little nod to Les Miles there. I'm going to ask you about those digits on the other side. And after this timeout, you've got more Bumper to Bumper Sports live from the Tap Room River Ranch.
Whether he's sinking or swimming, Ben Love is just the guy to lead you in the right direction as you make your way back home from work. Now, back to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game.
We're coming up quickly on a sink or swim question that could be divisive. Maybe it won't be. We'll find out altogether. But I've got a really cool tidbit before we get to that question, before we start to answer and then have some tallies on either side of the divide. I enjoyed this. From Brody Miller, LSU beat writer for The Athletic. Here is a list of healthy players who could play beginning this Saturday against Arkansas for the Tigers and still keep a red shirt. Do not forget, four games or less. You could play that many these days and still be good. And so, I guess technically speaking, LSU's in a position where the Tigers could play five, right? Two regular season games, Georgia and Atlanta, and then everybody hopes two more. So this is ever so slightly premature, but it's a good way to start thinking about things. Again, list of healthy players who could play Saturday and still be under the four-game maximum to keep the red shirt. Peter Parrish at quarterback, Anthony Bradford, Sony Finua, who a lot of people thought coming in had a chance to play a ton. At defensive end, I'm sure he'll still be fine. Tigers just haven't used him enough to burn the red shirt yet. T.K. McClendon fits the bill. Ray Parker from up in North Louisiana, a kid at Ruston who played tight end there and is kind of a tweener offensive tackle tight end at LSU. Dante Starks, who just returned to practice Monday for the first time since early October. They could use him at inside linebacker and not burn the red shirt. Same for Charles Turner on the offensive line and Desmond Little as well. This list does not include the big offensive guard from Baton Rouge, and a guy who was one of the absolute stars in LSU's 2019 class, and he is just now starting to come back from injury. So I think that there are still some ways this thing can go. But with the new relaxed redshirt rule, you've got an opportunity.
Looks like we lost Ben Love for a moment. Hopefully we can get him back before long. A little technical difficulties here on this Thursday afternoon. We're talking a little bit about LSU, some of the big things that Brody Miller had down the pipeline. Going to try and get Ben Love back on. Hopefully we can get him on before long. A little technical difficulties. We're just about to probably get to the sink or swim question of the day. And it is a bit of a doozy, just depending on what perspective you look at. With LSU heading into the game against Arkansas, it's, relatively speaking, obviously, meaningless ball game. Because LSU's going to be playing a team in Arkansas that definitely is going to be a bit of a head-scratcher. Are they going to be up for this ball game or not? That's the million-dollar question. But trust me, Coach O thinks that they're going to be up for it. Because you can't underestimate a team like Arkansas, especially with an interim head coach. He said as much yesterday during his SEC teleconference.
Yeah, don't underestimate them. They always play well. Against LSU, we have to play our best game. We're looking at the things that we didn't do well last week. We're still looking to play 60 minutes at the LSU Standard Performance. We haven't done that yet. Hopefully we can do it this week.
And I think that's definitely the biggest thing, is having to kind of not underestimate a program like the Razorbacks and be able to set things up for yourself to wind up getting this 11th win and be able to get ready for an Arkansas game. More importantly, to stay healthy. I think that's definitely the big thing that everybody is going to be looking towards, especially when it comes to the quarterback, Joe Burrow, obviously. After everything that happened last weekend at Alabama, Tua Tagovailoa, that's something that we've been talking about all week long, is what's happening with Tua Tagovailoa, that injury he had that took him out for the entire season. Let's see, we got Ben Love back. I'm hearing some stuff in the background. Ben, you back with us?
I'm back, and our apologies. Internet went out right in the middle of a set there. So, hey, we got it fixed, patched up. CD, thanks for piloting the ship. So, anyway, when last I left you, interesting stuff from Brody Miller about being able to keep a red shirt. I do want to get to our sink or swim question of the day, and we did lose a little time there. So let's go no huddle, CD the music, and then I'll get right after it.
Love, exciting and new.
Considering the stakes ahead of LSU football and considering the opponent coming to Tiger Stadium this weekend, here's your sink or swim question on a Thursday. How important to you are Joe Burrow's numbers in this Arkansas game? You know exactly what I mean. I don't have to explain any further. How important to you are stats that Burbank Joe puts up in this game against the Razorbacks? Call us up and let us know. 706-0111. Clint, lead us off.
They don't mean a hill of beans to me, Ben, because of the fact that you've already, in the case of Joe Burrow, he doesn't need to put up like 500 yards in this game. He can be pulled at halftime, and you're probably going to be able to handle everything. I think that's the biggest number I care about, is what quarter he gets pulled in. I don't care about the stats in this one. You don't have to pad the stats. The Heisman Trophy is already his. I'd much rather him be healthy heading into that Texas A&M game, and more importantly, the postseason, the SEC title game, and the CFP. That's what I'm more concerned about.
Arkansas is 2-8 on the season. The last time they played a football game, don't forget, Razorbacks are coming off a bye. They lost 45-19 at home to Western Kentucky. To say that this is a bad Arkansas football team is an understatement. You would be disrespecting Vanderbilt and Kentucky to say that Arkansas is on their level this year. Arkansas is several rungs on the ladder below that team. I would even go so far as to say that Utah State brought a better overall squad to Tiger Stadium this year than Arkansas's got coming up. And no, that's not pre-shade. Everything I just told you, the exception of my Utah State comparison, is factual. I feel pretty good about that assertion still. All that to say this, I'm with you, Clint. Burrow's numbers to me mean absolutely nothing. And I agree with you. I think that his performance against Arkansas will have nothing to do with whether or not he wins the 2019 Heisman Trophy, which, oh, by the way, we're going to know the answer to that here within the next 2.5 weeks. How crazy is that? Time flies at you really, really quickly. Burrow's health, LSU's team health moving down the stretch of this 2019 season, far more important. I have no concern for padding stats here, and I'm betting that staff feels the same way. So for me, it's a 0 out of 10 level of importance. If he takes a sack on the first series of this game and you don't like the way he gets up from it, I don't need to see him in there anymore. I feel that seriously about it. So for me, it's 0 out of 10 importance. All right, let's take a trip now to the Artco Equipment Hotline. Our first call of the day is Brody. Brody, how important are Joe's stats to you this Saturday?
Well, man, listening to you talk, you know, you kind of persuaded me to kind of agree with you, but I'm not saying his stats are necessarily as important as, you know, I guess some people might think or what, but you kind of threw me off, Ben, but I don't think they're that important, man, but I do want to see him play the whole game. Like, I'm going into this game thinking like Bill Belichick. Like, I don't care if they run the score up, you know, if he can stay healthy and the offense can keep him protected, then let him play, man. You know, the kid's phenomenal, and, like, I don't, man. You twisted me there, man. But I'm not against it at all. I'm for him getting all the great stats. I mean, he's already been, you know, probably the best quarterback LSU's had in the past three decades. But yeah, man, you definitely persuaded me. I was calling to tell you I think his stats are really important, but you kind of you definitely persuaded me, man. But you guys, Brody,
I'm gonna share with you, I guess, both sides of the aisle here, but I appreciate the call. Thank you, Brody. Persuasive talker. It's kind of what I do for a living, so I'll take that as a compliment from Brody. But here's the reality. I could paint a picture. One side of the fence is Kyler Murray last year. The way he played down the stretch helped to give him the 2019 Heisman over Tua Tagovailoa when we thought that thing was a lock for months last fall. And, yes, I suppose it is possible that Justin Fields at Ohio State, who's got games against Penn State this weekend, Michigan next weekend, and then the Big Ten title game, which is the final game that these pollsters will get to judge from, it is possible that Justin Fields this year becomes Kyler Murray last year. And that would leave Burrow as this year's Tua. The best all season long, there wasn't any doubt about it, but man, the stats late, and it was hard for the Sabermetricians to ignore it. That's one side of the fence, right? That's one version that I could paint for you, Brody, and everybody else. The other side also involves Tua, as in the thing that happened all of 5 days ago, lest we forget. You leave your guy in when you're up four scores, and sometimes you deserve what comes to you. And I'm not saying it was Saban's fault, so don't hear me wrong. I guess maybe the more fair way for me to put that, if you have him in at that spot, you got to accept what happens and the consequences. If you have Burrow in, I'm just throwing a hypothetical at you. He's got 250 yards at halftime. Remember back in the gap when that was a great full game statistical line for LSU quarterback? But let's just say that Burrow's only got 250 yards at the half. And LSU's up by 24 points at the half. And they decide they're going to bring him out one more series in the second half. Hey, come out, get fresh, stay sharp with the first team. And then something happens. It could happen in that circumstance. It could happen in the first series of a ball game. It's football. It could happen any time. Joe's a tough player. He's been given sound toward that end all week. But then you could end up like two of this year, and nobody would be able to forgive themselves. Forget about a Heisman loss. It would feel like a season lost, and for naught after starting 10-0. And I'm sure that Joe would feel that same way. So those are the two different ways to think about this. You can lose a Heisman if you don't keep your foot on the accelerator down the stretch, or you can lose a chance at a national championship. I don't see how that's even a debate. Just throwing it out there. So stick with us. We're going to hit our final time out of the hour, but I'd like to keep taking some of your thoughts on this because my guess is that some of us will see this differently. That's okay. I just love having the discussion. We'll be right back in. After this, T.O., time for more Bumper to Bumper Sports, live from the Tap Room River Ranch.
You say tomato, I say tomato. The famous Clint D says something that none of us will agree with. Back to more top shelf analysis for your drive home. It's Bumper to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game.
Quick heads up on high school football playoffs that actually begin tonight, week two of this 2019 playoff season. Kaplan taking a long trip up to Sterlington High School. How do you get to Sterlington? Oh, boy. Go to Monroe, go north. Don't quite get to Arkansas. You found it. And so Ray Parsh and company, a heck of a road trip that they're undertaking because we're going to air that ball game for you. My understanding, kickoff is at 6:30. And so you can listen to Kaplan and Sterlington on our sister station. Make that KVOL the Rewind, 97.7 FM and 1330 AM. High school football going to begin early this week. We'll have a full rundown of tomorrow night's action, including STM versus Evangel and plenty more when Blaine Viator joins us from 6 to 6:30. Right now, though, CD, I want to end this hour where we just ended our last segment, a discussion on how important or not important to you Joe Burrow's stats are in this Arkansas game. None of us would be discussing any of this if a Heisman weren't on the line. So that's kind of the point. LSU's only had one. Lift up that trophy. The late, great Dr. Billy Cannon. And as much as folks would like to see number two, my guess is they'd be more excited about number four. That would be the program's fourth football national championship, 1958, 2003, 2007, and then you can fill in the blank. You've got a chance for 2019 to finish a job that 2011 never did. Is it overly dramatic to you to tie these two things together, that perhaps Burrow's pursuit of winning the Heisman could put him in danger of being injured for the rest of this season? Call us up and let us know what you think. 706-0111. While we wait, got some good response from our Facebook followers. Again, we always post our sink or swim questions on Twitter and Facebook. At 1037 The Game is what you search. Jamie G, pull him early. Let him get his three TD passes and rest him. Well, that could happen by early to mid second quarter, depending on how much that Jefferson, Chase, Marshall, Moss, Elair and company are clicking. And also could depend on whether or not LSU decides to take the opening kickoff if they win it over the Razorbacks. So Jamie G says, get the three TDs and get out of there. Mike T, look, he will probably have 300 yards passing and four TDs by the end of the first half. Pull him if the defense can keep the Razorbacks at bay. There is no sense in taking a chance on injury. I agree with that. But here's where we maybe get into gray area. Not me and you, Mike T. All of us, as we have this discussion. If the argument is going to be made, don't risk injury, just do what you got to do to win, let's keep it 100 with one another. You could start Miles Brennan in this game, and LSU would beat Arkansas. In fact, I think they'd beat them fairly convincingly. You disagree with me? I think that Miles Brennan could play in this game, and while the spread wouldn't be 44, LSU would win by at least three touchdowns. And so we could put number nine in a bubble, or at least in bubble wrap, leave him on the sideline, have him a personal protector on the sideline at Tiger Stadium so that nobody could touch Joe. Okay, that's going too far, right? But how far is too far in this discussion? If he's healthy, he plays, right? How long does he play then? First quarter? Second quarter? Third quarter? Or is it more about where the score is? Three-score lead? Five-score lead? Seven-score lead? And don't laugh at me running that number up to seven-score lead, because after all, I mean, the spread is somewhere between six and seven touchdowns. So, again, that's the debate. How far is too far? We've got one more that we'll take over on our Facebook page. Zach W. says, all about the wins. So, again, where do you draw that line? We got some more time if you want to weigh in. 706-0111. While we wait on that, a bit of a look around the rest of the SEC and the top 25 in college football. LSU with a lopsided game, everybody is expecting, at home against Arkansas. As you look around the rest of the conference, there are some games of relative intrigue. Tennessee-Missouri is a matchup of 5-5 teams. Tennessee, wildly enough, is not buried as far as you would think in the SEC East. Right now they stand at third behind 6-1 Georgia, 6-2 Florida. Gators, of course, done with conference play. Tennessee's at 3-3. They beat Missouri. They're going to have a stranglehold on finishing third in that division. And you remember, it wasn't that long ago, we thought that Tennessee might be the worst team in the SEC. Thank you, Arkansas, for helping us clear that up. But as we look around the rest of college football in the top 25, no doubt about it, Penn State, Ohio State from the Shoe is your biggest game of the weekend. And to our devout hashtag we are followers who are listening, and you know who you are because I know who you are, Ohio State is favored by 18 points in a matchup of 2 versus 8. That is just wild to me. 18 points in that ball game. And sadly, that's the only game of the weekend that pits two top 25 teams against one another. Penn State and Ohio State, College Game Day will be there for that one. Everything else you've got, just teams trying to hold on to what they've got. I'll give you some examples. you've got number 10 Minnesota on the road at Northwestern. Minnesota trying to stay in line and maybe, just maybe, beat Wisconsin and have a chance to represent their side of the Big Ten in the conference title game in a few weeks. Few other teams that are just kind of trying to hold what they've got. Georgia, 13.5-point favorites at home over Texas A&M. The reality is the Bulldogs are going to play in Atlanta whether they lose this ball game or not. But if they were to play in the SEC title game as a 8 or 9 seed, well, you could see where they may be leaving some things to chance. Who else is trying to hold what they've got? Baylor, the number 14 team in the country, 5.5-point favorites at home over Texas. I mentioned Wisconsin earlier. They are large favorites at home over Purdue. And then Oregon is the final one I'll mention. Oregon, 15-point favorites at Arizona State. Herm Edwards and the Sun Devils have a chance to do some real damage. So LSU-Arkansas doesn't figure to be close. How long does Joe Burrow play in this ball game? We've had a little back and forth on that. But overall, this is a week where not too much is going to be separated unless there's a massive upset. The only big-time game, as we mentioned, Ohio State hosting Penn State. All right, enough of that, CD. Let's wind down our opening hour, and we'll do that as we always do with one final word.
What's up, Acadiana? I'm Gabe Broussard from Strange Theories and Season 11 of The Voice. It's almost 5 o'clock. Now it's time for the final word of the hour, and it's presented to you by me and my family at the Village Station. We are your final stop to fill up your stomach and your tank when you're heading home on Maurice Avenue. Now, here's Ben. His voice is pretty nice, but I don't think he could ever make two chairs turn.
Audible. Just got a text in our opening hour moments ago that our man Gordy Rush won't be available at straight up 5 o'clock. Coming home from Denver, the G-Man. He does know, right, that LSU plays a home game coming up in, I don't know, about 48 hours or so. Our guy's coming home from Denver. And so, yeah, without Gordy on the other side of this hour break, we'll call an audible. And we've got some fun things in store for you. Audible, the final word of this hour. And it's brought to you by the Village Station. We will come back in. We do have Dan McDonald scheduled for 5:45. The Louisiana Sports Hall of Famer. We'll talk Cajuns football. And then Blaine Viator at 6. So stick with us. We got plenty more coming at you. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports, and we are live at the Tap Room River Ranch on 103.7 The Game.
We interrupt our regular program for this special event.
All systems are go at this time.
It's time for the kickoff.
30 seconds.
Okay, listen up.
Get ready for the ride of your life.
Live and local from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station.
Number one.
We are number one.
103.7 The Game.
KLWB. Karen Crow Lafayette.
Let's get down to it.
And this is Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game.
And live online at 103.7thegame.com.
Is that who I think it is?
The wild, the weird, and the wonderful.
Hell yeah.
And now let's get started.
We are off and running. Hour 2 of 3 underway. Welcome back in to the Tap Room River Ranch for more Bumper to Bumper Sports live on 103.7 The Game. Ben Love here, the famous Clint D, for the next 2 hours. Joining inside the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing, we went Saints, Raging Cajuns football recruiting, and then Joe Burrow and LSU in hour number one. Let's get back onto a Saints tip. In case you're just joining us, Gordy Rush unavailable today. Our guy is flying back from Denver. Stay safe. Stay out of the snow. Get back to the boot. We may actually bring G-Man on tomorrow, I'm told. But right now, I'll get back to Saints Panthers, and we've got some sound that we haven't aired out this week. I want to make sure you hear both sides of the ledger, and that means starting with the Carolina Panthers. You're so used to Cam Newton being in that huddle, being in the shotgun, trying to run around, over, through Saints defenders, and now it's Kyle Allen's show for the remainder of this season with Cam's injury. I want you to hear at least one from Kyle Allen. And he's the first to say, I don't think this is just gamesmanship. When you turn on the film and watch New Orleans Saints defense these days, there's a lot that you have to respect. And Allen says, yeah, I've got plenty of that right now for Dennis Allen's group.
The defense from last year, I think they're a very solid defense, and they got a lot of great playmakers, and they're being put in position to make good plays. And so you've seen them get up on a lot of teams recently, and their defense plays tough, and they create turnovers, they create a lot of confusion, and they got a lot of playmakers.
And in case you're wondering, Kyle Allen making reference to last year last time he played against this Saints defense, that would have been the Week 17 game when Teddy Two Gloves came in and the Saints got stomped in a meaningless game because home field advantage had already been secured. So one more from Kyle Allen. He knows what it's like to play against this Saints team, but he admits it's been a long time since that last tilt.
You know, I didn't really have much time to think last year going in New Orleans, Week 17. You know, it was a wild year for me, obviously, getting cut, getting brought back, and being active the last two games and starting the last one. So, really, I was just trying to take advantage of an awesome opportunity and just trying to execute and play within the game and get a win for a team when we needed one. And, I mean, obviously, a lot of good memories coming out of that game with a win.
We'll go now from a guy that's been through a number of different team halls these last few years to a guy that's going to the Hall of Fame not long after he retires, Saints quarterback Drew Brees. And despite the team getting off to an 8-2 start, Brees coming back from a thumb injury, number 9 says here, he's not remotely satisfied.
You know, when you come out of a game and you look at drives that, man, well, why did that drive end? Well, we had a penalty that was an unforced error, or we had a missed assignment that would have resulted in a big play, but instead it was a loss or a no gain. So it's those things that you look at and say, man, the opportunities are so few and far between in the game that when you get them, you got to make them. You know, if you want to be the type of team that I know that we can be. So, no, I'm not satisfied right now. I think we can be.
Pretty strong leader. And Brees continues to sound off, this time on Nick Easton, who's had to fill in recently for Andrus Peat. And it looks like he'll have to do the same. Peat was one of four Saints that did not practice today. Pete's still dealing with a forearm injury, but here is Brees on Easton and the O-line that's having to kind of maybe get together on the fly.
He did a great job, and I know he's excited to get back, you know, into the action. Been a while since he had a start, he did a great job. And again, it's that, you know, that group, right? I mean, you always talk about those guys as a unit, you know, the group that has to work together, has to really communicate. I don't think people realize, you know, just how much is happening up front, you know, with what defenses try to do, especially in the pass rush with, you know, games. When we say games or stunts, you know, where it's not like here's a guy lined up over you and you just have to block him, right? All of a sudden he picks the tackle and then the tackle's guy loops inside and you're having to work with the tackle and make sure that, you know, he's not getting picked and you're picking up his guy, or here comes the center or the center's not helping you. I mean, there's just so many little elements to playing that.
Good insight for Brees, and we'll get back to his thoughts on the offensive line, how important they will be this week against Carolina. But since I mentioned the Saints injury report, let me give you the full rundown briefly. Four Saints did not practice on this Thursday. Andrus Peat was one, as I mentioned, dealing with the forearm injury. Marshawn Lattimore, Saints star cornerback, was another. Looks like he might be likely to miss a second straight week as well with a hammy issue. Deontay Harris, starting punt returner, didn't practice today, also a hammy. And then fullback Zach Line out today with a knee injury. Four additional Saints were limited. Tight end Josh Hill, concussion. A couple of starting offensive linemen, Ryan Ramczyk, Larry Warford, dealing with a knee and a thigh, respectfully. And then finally, Austin Carr with an ankle injury, didn't go at wide receiver. Something to bear in mind as we get closer to this Week 12 game. Saints 9.5-point favorites hosting the Panthers. But we'll get right back into some of the latest from Drew Brees. He touched on that Carolina Panthers pass rush. Again, I'll remind you, number one team in the league in terms of sacks this season.
You know, they get after you. They got a lot of good pass rushers. You know, this has always been a very aggressive defense, you know, a pressure-style defense. They have, obviously, one of the smartest, best players in the game, and Luke Kuechly. And you see how active he is in his communication and leadership on that side of the ball. So they're doing a good job of getting pressure, you know, on opposing teams and taking the ball away. And, you know, again, for us, it becomes about our execution, our attention to detail in regards to the protection. And then also, you know, when we do have opportunities to make plays.
Just cutting Brees off at the knees there. All right, let's take one more for the offensive side. And let's go to Jared Cook, starting tight end, caught a touchdown against Tampa, starting to come on of late. And he was asked, Cook was, about how he does, maybe he doesn't, compliment Michael Thomas. I'm as interested you are to hear this one.
Yeah, for sure. I feel like I help get him open and vice versa as well. as well as Ted and Traquan and other guys. So, you know, we continue to push forward. We continue to work off and build off each other.
When you really think about it, these guys, when healthy, are pretty darn perfect complements for one another. Michael Thomas, the ultimate possession receiver, who's got some ability to break tackles as well. But really and truly, Mike Thomas on the quick slant, Mike Thomas doing sideline work. There aren't too many in the league, if any, that are better than him. Then you've got Ted Ginn Jr., again, when healthy, who could stretch the field vertically and clean it up over the middle, taking some cover off of those guys, is Jared Cook. We'll go to the defensive side before we're out in our opening segment of the 5 o'clock hour. Demario Davis playing like an all-pro these days. And he was asked about a guy who I think is going to notch a similar achievement on the offensive side of the football. Here's Demario Davis on Panthers starting running back Christian McCaffrey.
McCaffrey's probably one of, if not the most explosive backs in the league. The offense trusts him a lot. You know, I think last year he was like getting 40% of the touches and probably getting just as many as that, you know, now or more. I think he's at the top of the league in all-purpose yards, top of the league in running. So, I mean, he can do it all. He can run the ball inside, outside, catch the ball out the backfield. He can protect. He can run routes on the outside and out the backfield. I mean, so he's a generational talent.
And so is Kamara for the Saints. And, you know, it's interesting. I think it's easy to have this discussion when the Saints and Panthers play one another, as they will twice, final six games of this regular season. Demario Davis was asked about Kamara, McCaffrey, and how much you can compare them. We literally just did this a few days ago in the program, but we're just, you know, guys and gals that are watching this thing on TV or listening to it when we can on 103.7 The Game. Here's the guy who's playing with one and against the other, Demario Davis. Can you compare Run CMC and AK-41?
Yeah, probably as far as when it comes to versatility. You know, Alvin and McCaffrey definitely have a unique skill set that you can probably compare to each other. They're in a league of their own in that regard, as far as being a running back that can run the ball and attack you from as a receiver. Of course, I'm a little biased when it comes to that, which one I'd take, but, you know, it's a tough.
You want my final grade out pairing these two, I guess, tail to tape style? Believe it or not, I'll actually take Kamara as a pass receiver. I'll take Kamara lining up in the slot. In fact, I think there's a chance he's a much better slot receiver than Christian McCaffrey. I'll take Kamara out of the backfield catching balls. It's a little tighter, the gap there. But I will take Christian McCaffrey running between the tackles. I will take McCaffrey and what he seems to bring as a blocker. He is more built, and I can't believe I'm saying this, based on his body frame even 2 years ago, McCaffrey is more built to be a three-down back than Kamara is. So that's why I give him the overall edge that I did the other day when we started talking about the best running back in all the NFL. Both of these guys are way up there on that list. So give me Kamara, the pass receiver, certainly lining up at the slot position. In fact, to me, I mean, look, I'll tell you right now, I think the most dangerous set, personnel-wise, schematically, that the Saints come out in is when they line up Kamara in the slot and Michael Thomas as an outside receiver outside the hash. When those two are on the same side of the field and it's just those two, I don't know how you guard that. I really don't. So I will take AK-41, the pass catcher, but give me McCaffrey toting the rock. Again, it's not a large margin, but at least by a little bit. All right, we're going to take our first break of this 5 o'clock hour. Don't forget, we got Dan McDonald coming aboard in half an hour. At straight up 6 o'clock, Blaine Viator. So we'll be talking Cajuns and high school football playoffs before you know it. But on the other side, let's get back around to LSU football. We'll be taking your calls at 706-0111. So stick with us. We got a brief timeout and then more of the good stuff. Bumper to Bumper Sports live at the Tap Room River Ranch.
One of them is famous in Cajun country. The other has a set of pipes that never quits. Seriously, we've tried before. Together, Ben and Clint bring you home on 103.7 The Game.
The real power of our football team, especially the offensive explosion. I think our offense is clicking on all cylinders right now. We've got a little work to do defensively, but I was very proud of the win.
The Coach O Show last night, and there's Ed Ogeron. Offense clicking on all cylinders, and that includes an incredibly dynamic running back. A cool fact on Clyde Edwards-Helaire. I'll get to that in a moment, but we are back in to the Tap Room River Ranch. And do not forget, this is a very cool fact, 8 to 11 tonight, Corey Lynn Landry laying down sound. Just a good time. There's no cover charge. More than 40 beers that are on tap. The best flatbreads in town. Plus the wings with the swing sauce. It's the only way that you should have wings when you come here because they're delicious. So come and take that in. Listen to my man Corey Lynn Landry and start your weekend a little early at the Tap Room River Ranch. Back to CEH. That's Clyde Edwards-Helaire to you. It was announced earlier today. The Tigers back, one of 10 semifinalists for the Doak Walker Award. Really, really cool. Annually, that award presented to the top running back in college football. And I'll tell you what else is interesting. Clyde is the only SEC back to make this list of 10. Now, he's not the only one from the state of Louisiana. Some guy named Travis Etienne from some high school in the Jennings area, now playing for Clemson, is on the list as well. They've got running backs from Ohio State, Wisconsin, Utah, SMU, Ohio State, Memphis, and Clyde. And I'll tell you this, CD. Edwards-Helaire leads the SEC in rushing touchdowns with 12. That's pretty cool. He's third on LSU's team in receptions. With all the talent they've got at wideout and tight end, that's actually a pretty large statement this year. I think this, however, speaks largest about the season that Clyde Edwards-Helaire is having. He shows up when it matters. And this isn't meant to diminish the accomplishments and huge seasons that Leonard Fournette and Darius Geis had while coming through the turnstiles. But consider what I'm about to tell you. Clyde Edwards-Helaire has rushed for 100 yards or more in 5 of LSU's 6 SEC games this season. You think that guy's not important? 5 out of the 6 times that they've played league teams, he's gone over the century mark. He also had one of his biggest games catching the football out of the backfield against Texas. When LSU has had to win on a big stage and Burrow can't do it all by himself, Clyde Edwards-Helaire has been phenomenal this year. And deservedly, we learned today that he has made the Doak Walker semifinalist list. So there you have it. Not one, but 2 LSU receivers, semifinalists for the Biletnikoff Award, starting running back, a semifinalist for the Doak Walker Award, and whatever award that they give to the best quarterback in the country, I think it's called the Maxwell Award, doesn't matter, but it goes to Joe Burrow. This offense has been that legendary. So pretty cool stuff. And not just because Clyde and I share an alma mater in terms of high schools in the Baton Rouge area. I wouldn't be that petty. Would never be that guy. I'm just happy for this young man, everything that he has been through. All right, we got some time for your phone call. 706-0111. We're getting closer to LSU, Arkansas. I don't know how many people are really excited about that. I do know that more people are excited about getting past this, getting to A&M, and then unleashing holy hell after a year's worth of waiting. That's kind of the vibe that I've gotten, at least. Maybe you feel differently. I kind of get the impression that most folk that bleed purple and gold are just trying to get through this one, not have anybody injured, and have a chance to hang a crooked number on Jimbo Fisher and A&M. And I think that would make a lot of people's Thanksgiving weekend complete. Everybody's trying to map this bad boy out right now. They want a Saints win in Atlanta on Thursday night, and then they want an LSU win, and resoundingly, over Texas A&M in Baton Rouge on Saturday night. In between, probably hoping their favorite high school football team advances to the semifinals of their respective playoff brackets. So, again, everything is setting up right. this is the weekend that you just kind of have to survive. And I could say that, frankly, about the three programs and franchises that we frequent. LSU taking on Arkansas. Cajuns, double-digit favorites at home against Troy. Now, that's a Trojans team that you can't trifle with. You got to take them seriously, but still, surviving and advancing to the ULM final of this regular season, I think, is a big deal. And then the Saints got to get past Carolina at home. All these teams near double-digit favorites or more. But I think for LSU Arkansas, it is about staying healthy. It is about getting some of these next men up playing time, and it's about getting right before A&M. Because that's a game that's got a lot of significance, not just to the fans, not just those in the media, but I think everybody in that locker room is going to want a piece of the Aggies after what happened last year, seven overtimes worth in College Station. At least, again, that's the vibe I'm getting heading into these final two games of LSU's regular season. But 10-0 is just about more than anybody would have projected and more than what most of us expected. Clint, I had LSU at 11-1 this year. Remind me, in August, what was your projection for the Bayou Bengals?
I believe it was either 11-1 or 10-2. I'm not 100% like remembering, but I know it was somewhere around that range.
I know you weren't 11-1. It was less than that for you, so we'll slot you in at 10-2. Because I definitely got some Kool-Aid sipping speak when I picked 11-1 this year. Of course, I don't think anybody believed LSU would beat Bama until we saw the way this offense was rolling. And now I think, as Ed Ogeron reminded you with that drop coming into this segment, it's clicking on all cylinders. Guys up for awards. This team on the cusp of, I mean, setting SEC single season records for performance. It has a chance to be a very exciting flurry of awards in the postseason. But more than that, it's got a chance to end in a run toward a national championship. Getting past Arkansas is a necessary next step. All right, our next step is a break. When we return, it's time to throw shade, and Jamal Adams will be prominently involved. If Bryce Harper once famously said that's a clown question, bro, Jamal Adams, the president playing safety for the New York Jets, is claiming that that's a clown show on your part. You're going to enjoy that shade. It's coming at you next, and then Dan McDonald in about 18 minutes. Stick with us. After a brief timeout, we'll be right back in with more Bumper to Bumper Sports live from the Tap Room River Ranch.
This show won't protect your quarterback or cover downfield, but it's got animal control down pat.
Oh, if you see a possum, try to kill it, okay? It's not a pet.
Back to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game.
We got shade, and it's coming very quickly at you regarding a former LSU player, but we're starting to get some more intel in about current LSU football players. In fact, before we get to Jamal Adams, a former LSU safety, we got to get to Grant Delpit, a current LSU safety. As of the last 8 minutes, Delpit has officially been ruled out of the Arkansas game. I don't know that it's a huge surprise, but Ed Ogeron, meeting with the media as we speak, has said that right tackle Austin Deculus and safety Grant Delpit will not play Saturday night against Arkansas. Coach O went on to say that freshman Maurice Hampton will get the start at safety in place of Delpit. So all very, very interesting. And I'm just going to suggest this. Maybe, just maybe, it gives a little credence to this idea that they're going to go ultra-conservative with key personnel. We talked a lot in the 4 o'clock hour about Joe Burrow. How long is the leash? How important are your numbers and his stats on his chase for a Heisman? And I think most agree the numbers don't mean a hill of beans. And if somebody like Delpit, who's been injured and dealing with something, isn't even going to play, I think you could bet this is writing on the wall stuff. They're not going to keep Burbank Joe in any longer than they have to. A final thought on that? Pretty cool that Maurice Hampton will be getting a start. I know that LSU's going far down the line at safety, but that's a guy that is going to play a ton for Paul Maneri this year at center field for LSU baseball. I love seeing the dual sport athletes getting their turn. All right, it is my turn to remind you, as I do every day, that no one throws shade outside your home or business like Patio Center. Go to their website, patiocenter.com, and you can start to dream when you see the standing seam metal awnings, the customized patio covers with the cypress accents, and you know that that's just the tip of the iceberg. They're going to sit down with you, Mark and Company at Patio Center, and help you create a vision and then fulfill it. Before this coming spring or summer, before it's hot as the Dickens every single day, you can have the best patio game on your block. All of that becomes a reality when you go to the website, patiocenter.com. They are the kings of customization because it's never one size fits all for the licensed, insured, and bonded professionals at Patio Center.
It's time for Throwing Shade on Bumper to Bumper Sports. Nobody throws shade outside your home or business like Patio Center. Visit the website at patiocenter.com.
We mentioned Grant Delpit not playing against Arkansas. All right, that's current LSU safety talk. Former LSU safety Grant Delpit, he made a statement, and we brought it up on this program the better part of 3 weeks ago. And it was made public that his general manager at least fielded calls about his availability. Could have been something as simple as, look, we just want to hear what the asking price is so that maybe we can raise it and let teams know. Nah, it's not going to happen. Or legitimately, they could have been shopping the former LSU safety. We'll never technically know. But it did rub Jamal the wrong way. And he came out and said the Patriots aren't taking calls on Tom Brady. The Rams aren't taking calls on Aaron Donald. And that ruffled some feathers. And I'm curious how much you agree or disagree with infamous WFAN host Mike Francesa. Because the former Mike and the Mad Dog co-host went off on Jamal Adams. Now, what's funny about this, this soundbite is actually from Halloween Day, October 31st, way back when, exactly 3 weeks from today. But it came back up on Twitter because Jamal Adams quote tweeted it with a clown emoji. So I'm going to let Clint air this whole thing out for you. It's about 2 minutes in length, but here is Mike Francesa crushing the face of Jamal Adams and throwing plenty of shade in the process.
The Rams don't take calls on Aaron Donald. The Pats don't take calls on Tom Brady. Okay. What does that have to do with you? Since when are you in that league? You don't belong even being discussed with those guys in the same sentence with those guys. Okay, number one. This is the problem with this kid, as I've told you all along. This guy has separated himself from the team the whole time. I'm good, they're bad. They're bad, they lose, I don't lose. I'm good, okay? So just make sure you understand. It's me, I'm good, they're bad. Enough of this stuff. This kid's got to grow up. He's a nice player. He's not a great player. He's a good player. This is not how you build a team and turn it from a losing team to a winning team, is getting selfish me guys like that who want to single themselves out. This cry of how dare they? How dare they? I mean, who is he? Now he's going to compare himself to the top players in the league? I mean, come on, get serious. Adams has got some talent, but he's not what he thinks he is. He thinks he's some great player, and you know he wants to be compared to the best players in the league, which is a farce. It's comical. He's accomplished nothing. I mean, it's really comical. It really is. And he gets frustrated late in the game, so he commits bad penalties. When he makes mistakes, well, I make mistakes, okay, if I do, but no one else can. And then he wants to single himself out from the rest of the team after the game to make everyone understand that he is not, you know, this, you know, losing player. He is different than everybody else. No, you're not. You're a losing player on the same team, and you're all in it together, and that's the bottom line. And you know what? He's not a great player. So stop putting yourself with the Tom Brady's of the world. He is a child. He acts like a child. And you know what? You don't need guys like that. You don't rebuild with guys like that. You get rid of guys like that. I would have shopped them, too. The only thing that didn't happen for the Jets is they didn't get rid of them. Because they would have been better off if they had the picks and they could get some guys in here who are not me guys, who are not about that, who are about winning. And not about separating themselves from the team like this guy does at every turn. And makes it about him. And to compare himself to Tom Brady, would you please? I mean, get over yourself. What do you have in common with Tom Brady? Except you both wear helmets. I mean, give me a break. Please.
Maybe the ultimate shade at the end there. What do you have in common with Tom Brady other than that you both wear helmets? I'm not going to lie to you. I actually agree with a good bit of what Mike said there. probably went overboard a tad, as he is wont to do when he called him a child. But a lot of that is in Jamal's DNA. And I noticed that when I covered him, I've been covering him since he was in high school, you don't put yourself in the camp with a lot of those guys. So I actually think some of that shade was warranted from Mike Francesa. But, man, did he just come from off the top rope. Jamal Adams didn't like it, so these two throwing shade at one another, and they both get paid a whole lot of money. So I guess it's all good in their hood. But, Clint, that was some pretty big size shade.
We're done throwing shade on Bumper to Bumper Sports. For now, you want your life made in the shade? Visit PatioCenter.com and explore ways to improve life outside your home or business.
Big Apple style shade, to be certain. All right, we got to hit our final timeout in the 5 o'clock hour. When we return, Dan McDonald joins Bumper to Bumper Sports, and we'll all be back for that and more at the Tap Room River Ranch.
You say tomato, I say tomato. The famous Clint D says something that none of us will agree with. Back to more top shelf analysis for your drive home. It's Bumper to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game.
We do have top shelf analysis because we've got a Louisiana Sports Hall of Famer on the line. Let's not keep him waiting. Quickly, we get out to the Ardco Equipment Hotline, and it is time for Dan McDonald, ready to talk some Raging Cajuns football. How are you, Dan?
Hey, how are y'all doing this evening? I'm fired up for football this weekend.
I am too. They're rolling and they're back home. What's the big storyline for you as Troy comes to town?
Well, I'll even give you a little bit of a scoop. I got a chance to talk to somebody who has a little bit of insight with the Greater New Orleans Sports Foundation today. And you know, if the Cajuns can pull off one of these last two, and win the West Division, there is a possibility hanging out there that they could. The winner of the league is not necessarily an automatic going to the New Orleans Bowl. They could, in essence, effect a trade. In simple terms, you know, if the Cajuns do get to the championship game, like we expect, if they win one of the last two, they could be in the New Orleans Bowl even if they don't win the conference championship game. So that's what I'm sort of gathering from a source down in New Orleans. So that's kind of got my postseason blood flowing just a little bit.
That's big-time information. How about the full rundown, Dan, on what all the Cajuns have in front of them as far as postseason possibilities?
Well, if they can beat, of course, one of these, if they win one of the last two over Troy and ULM, you know, they'll win the West and they'll be in the championship game. Now, Appalachian State, you know, if they take care of their business, you know, they're going to wind up being the host of the game again. But, you know, that's still not a fully done deal. They've still got some work to do. And if somebody else along the line can pull off a win over Appalachian State, I mean, they still got to go to Troy. You know, I don't know if Texas State would be much of a obstacle for them this weekend at home, but they still got to go to Troy that last weekend of the year. So, you know, it's not a done deal that they're going to, you know, finish running the table the rest of the way. And if Troy can, you know, do the Cajuns a favor, you know, suddenly if UL can win the last two, you know, they'd be in position to host that championship game. That's still not out of the realm of possibility.
Dan McDonald, our guest, talking Raging Cajuns football on 103.7 The Game. A week after we learned Ron Roberts is a Broyles Award semifinalist, that UL defense, not its best effort. I think it's fair to say. Where do you think they are coming down the stretch of this regular season?
Well, I think South Alabama, for whatever reason, is a tough matchup for them. If you go back and look at last year, South Alabama was the only team last season that outrushed them in a Cajun win. I mean, they had more rushing yardage than the Cajuns did last November in that game that they played here at Cajun Field. And, of course, they were able to move the football last Saturday. I think it's just, you know,
you know, some teams have a number on some other teams. I think the big thing is that UL found a way to come through in the second half and did what they have done all year, and you know, played better after halftime. And you mentioned Ron Roberts. You know, I think part of that is, you know, some of the adjustments that they make. Later in the game, they were able to, like, get the one or two stops that they needed that gave the offense a chance to sort of take control of the game. And I think that was the abomination more than I think is going to be the norm going forward, especially with these last two games, because neither Troy nor ULM runs the football anything like South Alabama does.
What do you think about this offense and the direction that they're heading right now, considering that I think Levi Lewis has been up and down with how much they've asked him to do, how much he's performed, but consistently he knows he's got a ground game and a potent one behind him?
Yeah, I think so, and I think he's also going to have a healthy Trey Regis now, and that's a big difference. You know, when you have, you know, you had Elijah Mitchell and you had Raymond Calais, but you can add that one more big bruising guy in there. You know, it makes teams have to defend you a little bit differently. And I think that we'll be able to open some things up. You know, I think Saturday's going to be a showcase offensively, and maybe on both sides of the ball, because Troy's going to score points. But they've also given up points. This is unlike some Troy teams in the past that had all those big studs on defense. They're not quite that defensive unit anymore. I think that both teams are going to be able to move the ball. You know, I think if Louisiana doesn't turn it over, doesn't make mistakes in the kicking game, and they played really well in special teams over the last few weeks, you know, I think it, unless they commit a whole lot of turnovers, I think they're going to come out there and win a game where, you know, I don't know what the over is, but I think people ought to take a real close look at it.
Dan, I vividly remember almost this time a year ago talking to you on this program, and the storyline was prior to the Sun Belt Conference title game, Scott Satterfield was a candidate to leave App State. Do you think that's something that could become realistic for this UL administration and Billy Napier this offseason?
I really don't know. And the only reason I say that is this is only 2 years. You mentioned Scott Satterfield. He had been successful at Troy for a little bit longer than that. You know, are there going to be some really good spots, you know, open? Probably so. Or is somebody going to take, you know, a good look? Is Billy Napier going to get looked at by, you know, some Power Five conference teams? You know, I think so. The only thing that I think somebody's going to look at is they're going to say, you know, has he done it on the long term? He's obviously been very successful in 2 years. If they go back and look and see where the program was and where it is now, they're going to be impressed. But I think that's the only thing that might, you know, stop somebody from, you know, throwing an awful lot of money and throwing a really good Power Five program, you know, in his lap. Do I think that's going to happen down the line? I think without question. You know, I just don't know if it's going to be this year. But, you know, I think that's also, you know, I think it's a testament to what he has done and what I think everybody thinks that he will continue to do as long as he's here.
Before we let you go, I know that you're calling UL basketball games these days alongside Eric Mouton. Bob Marlin's Cajuns, they're 3-1 on the year, and they're at 2-3 Wyoming tonight. Handicap that one for us, the Cajuns in Laramie, Wyoming.
Well, Wyoming is not quite the team that they were 2 years ago. The Cajuns ran into them in that Cayman Islands tournament in the semifinals after both of them won the first round. And Bob Marlin said himself that they got out-physicaled in that game. They're not quite the team I don't think that they were then. I mean, they lost some games to some teams that, you know, were not exactly powerhouses and lost them at home. Now, I think it's going to come down to if the Cajuns can find some shooting touch, which they've been able to do at home. They didn't do it very much at TCU with the exception of Cedric Russell. He had a great shooting game at TCU. Just, you know, got hurt in the groin and had to leave in the second half. And I think that kind of put a pin in the balloon the Cajuns had over there. But I think if they can come out, find some shooting touch tonight, get Russell going, get Jalen Johnson going again, and get Kobe Julian going because he had a great game against Youngstown State. If they can do those three things, It would surprise me, not only if they go and win at Wyoming, I think they can have some success in those two games Monday and Tuesday in Vegas.
Always fun to catch up. Dan, enjoy the rest of this week and your Thanksgiving week as well.
I appreciate it, Ben. Y'all too.
The great Dan McDonald giving us some time on this Thursday. And, of course, multifaceted, right? We go football, we go basketball, had time permitted, might have thrown him a curveball. Literally, could have talked a little baseball. Matt Deggs and the Rage of Cages as well. My guess is we'll be doing that sooner than later on the program with Dan McDonald. All right, we are just about 2 hours down. We got a heck of a game plan for the final hour today. Here's where we're going next. Blaine Viator coming aboard. And for once, my man's not going to be live at the Tap Room River Ranch. That's a mistake for him. But bringing him on, that's a good decision on our part, especially when we're talking prep playoff football. And so from 6 to 6:30, we're going to give you a great second round game involving an area team and a great one that doesn't involve an area team from all of the brackets that you care about. You don't want to miss that. Then we'll get to an NFL Week 12 preview at 6:30. Q&A replay. The best from McNeese State wide receiver Trevor Beggy, the former STM wideout, joined us earlier this week. We're going to run that back at about 6:45. So a big hour coming. Don't you go anywhere. I'm Ben Love, and you're listening to Bumper Sports live from the Tap Room River Ranch on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game.
We interrupt our regular programming for this special event.
All systems are go at this time.
It's time for the kickoff.
30 seconds.
Okay, listen up.
Get ready for the ride of your life.
Live and local from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station.
Number one.
We are number one.
103.7 The Game.
KLWB. Karen Crow Lafayette.
Let's get down to it.
And this is Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game.
And live online at 1037thegame.com.
Is that who I think it is?
The wild, the weird, and the wonderful.
Hell yeah.
And now, let's get started.
Time to get preppy as we return for our third and final hour. Ben Love hanging out at the Tap Room River Ranch. This place starting to pack and heat up as we get to 6 o'clock. And, yeah, we've talked LSU, UL, and the Saints on 103.7 The Game today. But, Clint, as we return, it is time to talk about Week 2 of the Prep Football Playoffs. And we brought aboard one of our favorites. He's on the Ardco Equipment Hotline. Of course, it's Blaine Viator. Blaine, it's time. Nobody's got to buy anymore. Everybody's got to play if they want to advance. This is the time of year that everyone's been competing to get to.
Oh, it's so exciting, Ben. Look, we always talk about what separates the good teams is the great. The great ones play on Thanksgiving week. So I think a lot of teams who had good seasons will see their seasons end come Friday night. But there's going to be some great teams playing next week. And I think we have some very intriguing matchups, not only in the Acadiana area, but around the entire state.
And you read my mind. That's the way we're going to break this down over the next half hour. We will start on the non-select side, beginning with 5A, the name of our game. We're going to give you one game featuring an area team that we're highlighting and then one that doesn't pit a team from Acadiana against anybody else that we like as well. Blaine, let's start in 5A. I'll let you lead off. The game that you're going to be monitoring featuring one of our own teams.
I think it has to be that Como-Houghton game tomorrow night. And look, the Como team went on the road last week and was able to defeat Slidell pretty handily. Their defense actually led the way. They forced all kinds of turnovers in that ball game. And then when you got playmakers like Malik Nabers on the outside who could just make plays in space, it makes you awfully dangerous come playoff time. It'll be a little bit different matchup this week. They always have a good ball club, but they got to come down from North Louisiana to Como. I don't know how long that 3-plus-hour bus trip is going to affect them. I think Como has a shot in this game. I know that's kind of scary to say. I didn't think we'd be talking about Como here in the second round of the playoff, possibly going to the third, but I think they have a puncher's chance tomorrow night.
And I'm going to tell you that my game I'll be watching is number one Acadiana hosting number 16 Walker. Walker is underseeded at 16, just my two cents. I know their head coach very well. I've known Chad Mahaffey since I was 14 years old on the campus of Catholic High in Baton Rouge. The guy can get it done. He had some of the best teams the state has known over the last decade at U High. He's moved over to Walker and partner All Walker did last week was beat Thibodeau in a 16 versus 17 game, 63 to 21. Walker scored 63 last week. Acadiana scored 78. This one should be fun. And make no bones about it, I got to think that Matt McCullough and the Wrecking Rams, if such a thing existed, would be favored. But I think this one's going to at least be entertaining over at Bill Dotson Stadium. So I've got that one circled. And let me just give you my game that doesn't feature an area team and see if you agree with me. I'm very intrigued by number 5, Zachary, hosting number 12, Hondville. Those are perennial powers. They both got it done with defense, allowing less than 8 points to their opponents in the round one game. I like Zachary Hondville a lot. That could be an entertaining ball game.
Yeah, and let me just touch on the Acadiana-Walker game first. I've been seeing a lot of Acadiana fans talking about Walker not advancing to the second round of the 5A playoffs of something like 1999, but this is a different Walker team coming into Bill Dotson tomorrow night with Brian Walker, the junior wide receiver on the outside. He's going to be a top 100 player in the country next year. I'm not saying Acadiana's not going to get it done. Hell, I think they win by double digits going away, but I think that ball game's going to be competitive going into the third quarter. And I'm going to echo what you said, Ben, on that Zachary Hondville game. These are two teams that typically play deep into the playoffs, and I don't think this year is any different. So Zachary only won a state championship, what, 3 out of the last 5 or 6 years? So, you know, they could get it done, and Hondville's going to be coming in with all kind of athletes, and they could get it done as well. I think that's got to be one of the most intriguing matchups, as well as that Alexandria-Mandeville ball game. Alexandria is just littered with D1 prospects. Bud Clark's going to Virginia from Alexandria, and Jacoby and Guillory, of course, going to LSU. But this Mandeville team plays really good defense. They were able to shut down a Bog team last week that could put up points in bunches. So Alexandria traveling to Mandeville, at least give Mandeville a little bit of a shot now.
I will drop down to Class 4A. Ben Love joined by Blaine Viator, and convince me that it's not Eunice at Bastrop, the 8-9 game. I know that Eunice has to travel way up north. Of course, Eunice, the defending 3A champs, they moved up to 4A. This one is incredibly intriguing for me. I think it's the game to watch featuring our area teams.
I'm going to go with Burbridge Belches. Burbridge probably a little bit overperforming this year, but they're playing really good football. They came in at the number 6 seed, and they took care of South Terrebonne with no issues last week. And a 35-12 victory. Bell Chase, I'm not sure really quite what to make of them. Burbridge gets to host them. I really like what they're doing with Octavian Girard and company. I think that offense is playing a lot better than they were earlier in the year. And they always play good defense, just holding, you know, Terrebonne to 12 points last week. I really like this Burbridge team and this ball game.
I'm going to give you one that doesn't involve our area teams. And speaking of woefully underseeded, number 20, Warren Easton. They played in the last two state title games in the Dome. They're at home, partner, taking on number 4, Tioga. And there's a chance that this follows a very predictable pattern. And that is teams from the Cintas area roaring in the regular season and then maybe whimpering a little bit come postseason play. I got to think that Easton wins this game at home against Tioga despite a 16-seed difference between the two.
And I think they're going to win going away. I don't think that ball game will be very close. No offense to Tioga, but they ain't seen the kind of catch that Warren Easton has when Shady Clayton, the Colorado commit, is going to come into town. They're going to see him tomorrow night in Pan-Am Stadium over in New Orleans. There's really no games that really intrigue me in this 4A bracket outside of that Warren Easton matchup. I think the favorites, it'll be all chalk, except one other one, and that one involves an area team. Ben, I think Westgate Assumption, I like Westgate handily in this ballgame. You and I saw that Assumption team last year. I know it's a different team. They got a lot of them student cats on their team, and they don't have the kind of athletes that the Westgate's going to bring into town. So give me Westgate tomorrow night as well, winning handily over in Napoleonville.
For what it's worth, I think Cairncrow, Brobridge, and Westgate advance to the state quarterfinals in this bracket. We'll see if Eunice can join them. That would be a lot of fun. I'm going to let you lead off as we go to Class 3A. Give me the area game that's most intriguing to you.
You know it's going to be my Church Point Bears, right? Church Point and Jennings. Well, that's going to be a good ball game. Jennings is going to get the host. They're coming over upset against number 10 seed Carroll, where they won 34-27. And Church Point just beat the brakes off of Frederick Douglass last week. This is a different Church Point team. They could score with teams this year, and they led with Matthew Planis, the running back, the school leader in rushing. I think they're able to handle Jennings. that's going to be a highly contested ball game, and it's going to set up a showdown against possibly Sterling Center Capital next week.
I'm not going to argue with you. I agree. It's Church Point Jennings. I'm just going to move on to the game that doesn't feature our area teams. And this, to me, is a little bit of old money versus some new money. I kind of like number 6, McDonough 35, playing host to number 11, Lake Charles College Prep. I didn't even know what LCCP was like 2 years ago. Now, suddenly, they're a team in 3A that you have to reckon with in Southwest Louisiana. The McDonough 35 Ron Eagles, we've known about for a while. They have college talent that comes in and out of that place. They got a kid that's playing at Notre Dame right now that you and I saw recently. That one to me is interesting. The fact that Lake Charles College Prep has to travel to the Big Easy probably makes them underdogs in that game. But again, old money versus new money, color me interested.
I think that's a good one, but McDonough 35, just too many athletes. Lake Charles College Prep, maybe just a little too early on the scene. We're just talking about Church Point. And Troy Citizen was the all-time leading rusher there before the Planners broke the record this year. His nephew plays for those Lake Charles College Prep teams. Good running back for the class of 2021. For me, I'm going to go with Madison Prep, Booker T. Washington. Booker T. Washington has a bunch of athletes, and they were able to put up a whole bunch of points last week against Lutcher. 47-21, they came out victors, and Madison Prep, oh, man, they're doing so many big things over there on the other side of Baton Rouge. They were able to take care of North Webster last week, 41-6. I think this is going to be a high-scoring, entertaining game that's going to be played at Struma High School tomorrow night.
All right, we're going to have to go quickly here to Class 2A and then hit a break. We're running out of real estate. I'm just going to point out the fact that a perennial power seems to be awake come playoff time. The Welsh Greyhounds, seeded 21st, went to Franklin and beat that team. Now they're going to play host tomorrow night, partner, to number 5, A-Meet. Can they beat a traditionally powerful A-Meet team? I don't know about that, but they've got them at home. It'll be an interesting ball game going west from Lafayette toward Lake Chuck.
And like, what about, I'm going to say, my most intriguing area matchup is Lauraville. The 20 seed went to Lake Arthur and won 48-38. Look, this is Terry Martin's first full season there as he took over right before the year last year. So second year, but first really year where he had an entire offseason. Zy Alexander back at quarterback. They're doing big things. I think they're going to run into a little bit of a buzzsaw, though, in the Mangum team that's ranked number 4 in the state. They're coming off of a wallop of Jonesboro Hodge, 54-6 last week. They do get Mangum at home, but that's a different beast than they saw on Lake Arthur last week.
There you have it. The non-select side of things. Games that we're excited about. We've got enthusiasm, too, about the select side. We'll skip Division One because we don't have anybody from our area there. We're going 2 through 4 area teams, not area teams, the best games for Week 2 of the high school football playoffs. Don't go anywhere. After a brief timeout, we'll share all that with you. More Bumper to Bumper Sports coming at you on 103.7 The Game.
Let's get back to more of Ben Love and Bumper to Bumper Sports, where we practically wrote the rules of football on 103.7 The Game.
Back at it and moving right over to the select side of things. Ben Love at the Tap Room River Ranch. And joining me on the Ardco Equipment Hotline for another segment is Blaine Viator, a smart man but not smart enough to come to the Tap Room today. That's his bad. Let's go to Division II, partner. We'll let you make up for it. I think it's pretty clear. The best game in this bracket, I think the best game in the state this weekend, is going to be STM hosting Evangel. Your thoughts on it?
Well, look, you kind of warned the folks of Acadiana last week that they were woefully underseeded. And did they prove you right? They went on the road to E.D. White and beat the brakes off of them. That final of that ball game was 84-20. Evangel's got a good ball club. I think one thing's interesting that we haven't mentioned yet is the weather that could possibly be in here tomorrow night. It could be some rain. How does that affect some of these area ball games? And kind of how does it affect St. Thomas for Evangel? Both teams that like to throw the football line up in the spread. I think that this game is going to be very competitive for about 3 quarters. And then I think St. Thomas More will be able to pull away with Jack Besh and Kale Holstein and company. But Evangel's very scary, and the amount of points that they could put up and how quickly they could score, whew, man, it's going to be a good one tomorrow night.
No question. After putting up 84 points down the bayou at E.D. White, Evangel's got everyone's attention. How much of a difference will it make? The Jim Hightower, this STM staff, they've been preparing for this ballgame now for 2 weeks. And trust me, they didn't waste one iota of prep time thinking about what Edie White might look like. So they've been pointed toward Evangel for a while. That one's going to be a lot of fun from Cougar Stadium. And I don't think there's any question about it. If we had to pick an area game, or I should say a game not featuring our area teams, the better of the remaining two is U-High traveling to Vanderbilt Catholic. There's no doubt that Andy Martin's U-High team is the better of these two, Blaine, but having to travel on this one makes it interesting for a Cubs team that certainly isn't what they have been the last few years.
I don't think what they are, what they have. And I mean, when you lose, like, almost 20 players that went on to play Division I football last year. But, look, this is just – you always tell me this. You tell me this on air all the time. Man, there's levels to these things. And U-High going to Vanderbilt, I just don't think it's going to be that much of a matchup. I really do think that Terling's Catholic traveling to De La Salle has a chance to be a pretty good ball game. Look, Terling's gritted and fought out a hard-fought victory against Parkview Baptist last week, coming through with that 18-14 victory. De La Salle's a little different, and when they go to Pan American tomorrow night, they're going to be in for a different kind of battle. They have different kind of guys. They're big and physical up front. I'm just kind of interested to see what Terling does to slow them down, and how do they want to play them on offense? Do they want to go quick and spread it out, or do they want to slow it down and maybe run between the tackles more?
Should be awfully entertaining in Select Division 2. We move now to Division 3, and can there be any doubt? I mean, no offense to LCA versus Holy Savior Menard, but I think it's a matchup we get every regular season, Blaine. It's Notre Dame, Catholic New Iberia is the area game to watch. I'm not telling you that it's going to be close and that fans in the stands will be sweating and biting fingernails in the fourth quarter, but this is always one that you have to pay attention to.
Well, in the last, 23 months, these teams have played, four times, so I think this game has everybody's attention. Brent Indes' team, they lost a few games early on, but they rattled off a bunch of wins in a row to end the season. They finished up as the number 7 seed last week. They welcome in St. Thomas of Aquinas and was able to beat them up pretty good, 48-12 at home. I think this is a game that Brent Indes is going to have them ready to play. I'm not so sure that Notre Dame's going to just be able to walk away with this one. I think it's going to be highly competitive late in the ball game. I do expect Notre Dame to win. I do think they're the better team, but I do not get the sense that this was going to be a blowout like a lot of folks around in the area do.
All right, so can I get you to bite on my favorite non-area team game? Number 5, Dunham, at number 4, Isidore Newman. Both of those teams had byes in the opening round, and that means that Arch Manning and the Greenies are going to play host to Neil Weiner's Dunham Tigers team. Your thoughts?
Look, Arch Manning's having just a spectacular freshman year. With the name recognition he has, he's going to be highly recruited, and rightfully so. He's a good quarterback. I think Dunham might be a little bit more seasoned for them. Neil Weiner's going to have his team playing well. I think that one's going to be very close, but I'm going to favor it, actually, that the visiting team. I think Dunham has a chance to go into New Orleans and win.
Not bad at all. All right, we'll go from Division 3 to 4. If we have a little extra time, we can circle back to some of these matchups. For me, out of the two area teams that are playing tomorrow night, VC hosting Country Day holds a little more intrigue than OC hosting Catholic Point Capiz. Agree or disagree?
Look, Justin Iabetta and Metairie Park Country Day, not having the season they thought they would. They were able to beat Central Catholic last week as a number 8 seed, 30-15. I think Vermilion Catholic with Leger at quarterback, it's just a different kind of beast. I don't think that game is going to be particularly close. On the other hand, I really do think Opelousas Catholic and Catholic of Point Capiz have all the makings of just a fantastic matchup here in the second round of the Class 4 playoffs. I think Opelousas Catholic has a little bit more star power and they're a little bit more seasoned. They were able to go on the road and beat BC earlier in the year, but Catholic of Point Capiz is famous for putting up gobs of points and being able to score very quickly. I think that that's a game that might be one close to watch. I think that's a team that could go in and upset Opelousas Catholic in the second round.
That's not bad at all. And frankly, if we're looking at the other two matchups that don't involve our area teams, they're both going to be good. Just depends on if you like your playoffs flavor, North or South Louisiana. Calvary Baptist is going to play host to Wachita Christian. And then on the South side, this is the one that I'm going to go with, partner. Number 3, Ascension Catholic, which has been to the state title game 2 years in a row in Select Division Four, is going to host number six Southern Lab. And both of these teams put up huge gobs of points in their opening round wins. I'm going to say that Ascension Catholic and Jai Williams, the best rusher in the state that you've never heard of, not you, Blaine, but the rest of the people listening, I think that Ascension Catholic is going to defend home turf in Donaldsonville and advance to play OC in the semifinals. But that's a battle of heavyweights in this division.
Jai Williams feels like he's been at Ascension Catholic for a number of years. I mean, he's rushed for over 2,000 yards each of the last 2 years as a sophomore and a junior. But look, Southern Lab, they got all kind of athletes over there. Reginald Johnson, the University of Houston commit over at wide receiver. They could put up points in bunches. And they have tons of athletes. I'm actually going to favor Southern in that game. Ascension Catholic's probably not what they were the last 2 years. I really think the Southern Lab can get this done, and that's going to set up a great showdown in the semifinals, either against Catholic or Point Coupee or Appaloosa Catholic. On the other hand, these are two teams that are always very good, North Louisiana and Wachita Christian and Calvary Baptist. Hey, just like the other game that you mentioned in the 3-6 matchup, these teams both go on over 50 points last week. Calvary Baptist, 52-12 victors versus St. Fed Frederick. And Wachita Christian, beaten Sacred Heart 54-0. All season they've been awfully good. They play a good schedule, Calvary Baptist. So I'm actually not sure this one's going to be as competitive as that other game we talked about. I think Calvary Baptist comes out with this victory, and I think it could be about a double-digit win.
Finishing up with Blaine Viator, we've run the gamut. Select, non-select sides. We got about a minute left, partner. Your thoughts on the game that you and I will call tomorrow night on Z105.9, number 5, Karen Crow, hosting number 12, Northwood Shreveport.
Oh, man, Northwood Shreveport, that's some dudes. It's going to be a lot different than it was last week for the Crow Bears. Their front seven, the Karen Crow coaching staff feels, is going to be the best front seven that they've seen since Acadiana in week one. They got the defensive end that can really squeeze that down block to take away the veer. But Kianco's offense has been so good, Ben, led by Kendrell Williams, going over 200 yards 2 weeks in a row the last 2 weeks. And I think that he's kind of a Kianco Superman, put that offense on his back and make it go. I think they just get it done tomorrow night. They're just playing too good, and the defense is actually really coming into shape on all three levels. Jonathan Green, the cornerback, a junior, a year ago he was a track guy playing football. I really think he's turning into a terrific cover corner, playing excellent coverage out there. I just feel like this is a character team that's really gelling and coming together at the right time.
I look forward to seeing you at the Open Air Crow Dome. Thanks for doing this. I know you're on the road today, but we'll catch up tomorrow.
No problem, bud. See you tomorrow.
Blaine Viator, dropping in. And again, I'll share with you what I've said a few times on this program. The path for Karen Crow is interesting. I think all of us had a suspicion that number 20 Warren Easton would beat number 13 Peabody in the opening game. Check. You just heard Blaine and me earlier. We have a sneaking suspicion, again, that number 20 Warren Easton is going to beat number 4 Tioga in New Orleans. So if that is another check, could be setting up something really, really cool on Black Friday. So between the Falcons and LSU playing, or listen to me, the Saints playing the Falcons and LSU playing A&M, you could well have Blaine and I down in the Crescent City, probably at Pan American Stadium, for Karen Crow versus Warren Easton as a state quarterfinal game, and maybe for the right to go play Lakeshore in the state semifinals. It's crazy that that's where we're at, but it's the time of year where you have to start thinking about what comes next. All right, next for us is a break. When we return, going to get you ready for Week 12 in the NFL season, and then some of the best clips to end today's program from a recent conversation with McNeese State wide receiver Trevor Beggy. Don't go anywhere. A brief timeout and then more Bumper to Bumper Sports live from the Tap Room River Ranch.
You're listening to Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love. Missed an interview?
No!
Acadiana Sports Station has got you covered.
Explain how.
Just head over to 1037thegame.com and check out the on-demand section.
Woohoo!
Now back to Ben Love and Bumper to Bumper Sports on 1037 The Game.
Right back in. Still hanging out at our Thursday haven. Yes, it's the Tap Room River Ranch. It's where we start our weekends early with you. We love it when you listen on Acadiana Sports Station while we're here. But we know that the true heads-up players come and join us And it's a nice little atmosphere. It'll get even better. Don't forget Corey Lynn Landry laying down sound tonight, 8 until 11. He's a decent guy. He loves the station. He enjoys the show. And he's pretty darn good here with the musical accoutrement as well. So come take that in. Again, no cover charge. You just have a great time. Start your weekend early at the Tap Room River Ranch. CD, we just had high school football playoffs galore. Conversation with Blaine Viator. We're going to go Q&A replay style. The best from our interview with Trevor Beggy earlier this week. We'll do that on the other side of our next break to close out today's program. But I want to give YP, you people out there in listener land, a fair warning of what's coming up with the NFL in Week 12. And we'll start with the Thursday night football matchup. We'll have that one on 103.7 The Game. Indy at Houston. This is one of the rare matchups this weekend that pits two AFC contenders against one another. I'll explain more fully later in this set. But Indy at Houston, it's not a playoff elimination game. But let me put it this way. You lose this one, and suddenly you're 6-5. What's more, you lose this one, you're kind of just bogged down, frankly, in the AFC South. Right now, Colts, Texans, both 6-4. Titans, 5-5. Jags, 4-6. So it's already a bit of a quagmire of a division. Clint, I don't need any Family Guy references from you. But I'll tell you this. It's hard to imagine that a wild card team comes from the AFC South. That's kind of my point. Right now, the Bills at 7-3 are second in the AFC East. They look okay, don't they? For a potential wild card spot, the Raiders are 6-4 in the AFC West, second in that division. They look okay for a wild card spot. I don't think it's going to happen for the AFC North or the AFC South. So this one's important, and I think that it's going to be pretty big for Indy. That Jacoby Brissett is back in play. As far as the Houston Texans, they've got to peel themselves. Deshaun Watson and company off the mat after being embarrassed by the Baltimore Ravens a week ago. But, CD, for me, the theme of this week, it's bigger on the NFC side as a number of contenders will play one another. But there are two interconference games that must be highlighted. Why don't I start with those affairs? Mid-afternoon Sunday, Dallas at New England is tasty. Patriots win, they're 10-1, and they extend their grasp on home field advantage to the AFC. However, if the streaking Cowboys win, wow, now all of a sudden we have to look at them maybe in a little different light. The other interconference showdown, Ravens, 3-point favorites at the Rams. That is Monday Night Football. It's the 8-2 Ravens at the 6-4 Rams. I'll get your 2 cents on those ball games, Clint. Again, Cowboys at Pats on Sunday, Ravens at Rams on Monday.
First of all, I got to say, Ben, I am so overjoyed about the fact that there's actually a watchable Monday Night Football game for a change, because they have just been absolutely god-awful all season long. But Ravens-Rams is definitely going to be something that you need to keep your eye on, especially because of the fact I think it's a lot like what we saw last year with the Chiefs-Rams game, where we saw Pat Mahomes have like a big, big ball game, and probably was a big reason why he was the NFL MVP. And we look at the MVP conversations that everybody's been having. Lamar Jackson is the front runner, not quite by country mile, but if he puts up a big performance, and more importantly, a win against the Los Angeles Rams, puts him firmly in contention of being a real MVP front runner, and by a good margin. Meanwhile, you brought it up perfectly. The Cowboys-Patriots game is going to be intriguing, largely because of the fact that the Cowboys, they've had those moments where they've had hills and peaks and valleys. If they win against the Patriots, they could wind up parlaying that into some really good stuff. A lot like what we saw with the Cowboys last year when they beat the Saints and started to turn things around towards the tail end of their regular season.
I'm with you that there's a lot of big opportunity in those two ball games. I wanted to make sure everybody understood. I think those are bigger opportunities for the teams that are worse off record-wise, right? I mean, that's the way I look at it. The Cowboys at the Pats, this is about opportunity for Dallas, but you don't want to get snowed and avalanched under back at 6-5 if you lose. This one's about opportunity at home for the defending NFC champ LA Rams, but they are underdogs in their own building. What I was leading into, I guess my final thoughts on this Week 12 in the NFL, it is more about the NFC because there are some strong matchups of teams that are playing one another. The highlight there, it's Sunday Night Football, and this is your game of the weekend. All due respect to those other two we just gave a little run to. Packers, 49ers, from the Bay, and not Green Bay, San Francisco's Bay. Three-point favorites, the 49ers at home. So Vegas is telling you that this one is even Stevens. It's a pick 'em if they play it neutral site. Pack at 8-2, Niners at 9-1, and we've been saying it all week long. Let me drive this home one final time. Best result here for Houdat Nation is clearly a 49ers win. It sounds contrary. It ain't. It's just simple arithmetic. You want to hang another loss on Aaron Rodgers and the Pack, and then you want to beat San Fran when they come to New Orleans in a couple of weeks. So just keep your eye on that one. The other big all-NFC affair, and it's going to be a noon Sunday game, Seattle at Philly. I do think that the best outcome here for Saints fans is a Philly win. I know that re-energizes Carson Wentz, Doug Peterson, and the Eagles because they moved to 6-5, but I think you want a third loss on the Seahawks' resume this year. Just throwing those things out there. And, of course, the Saints, we've talked plenty about them. In today's program, they'll be at home and 9.5-point favorites over the Panthers. So now you are learned up and studied up for Week 12 in the league, and it all starts tonight with an AFC South matchup, Texans and the Colts. We got to get you to that game. Before we do that, we'll have Trevor Beggy on the other side. Before that, we hit our final break. So stick with us. After a brief timeout, we'll be right back to the Tap Room River Ranch with more Bumper to Bumper Sports.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station, and you're listening to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game, live online at 103.7thegame.com. Follow on Facebook and Twitter now at 103.7 The Game.
Here we go, back at it one final time on a Thursday. It's been a heck of a run. The live music is coming at 8. That means they chase me out of here within the next quarter hour, so we'll make it count while we're here. Ben Love at the Taproom River Ranch, the famous Clint D. He's ready to spin some best of tracks. Not music, but it was music to the ears of football lovers in this area. Because earlier this week, it was our pleasure to have aboard Trevor Beggy, a junior wide receiver at McNeese State, a guy that's putting up pretty large digits these days. I mean, total catches, touchdowns, total yards. He has been part of a two-headed monster along with Kyron Sutton. And, of course, Trevor, a former STM Cougar. So when we caught up with him, that was really cool for the 5 o'clock crowd a couple days ago. But for our 6 o'clock crowd, and as we have a little bit of time left in today's program, I wanted to give you some of those best of sound bites. I think sports fans in South Louisiana will enjoy this from a lot of different vantage points. But let's get right to it. I asked Trevor about where he's at these days in that program. We know there's a first-year head coach in Sterling Gilbert, and he said, make no bones about it, I'm blessed to be a part of this Cowboys team.
It's exciting. Obviously, I still think we have a lot more to put in, which is really exciting. I think we're just showing a glimpse right now. You know, obviously, whenever you put when you get a new coach, especially a new offensive coach, and you implement a new offense, it's going to take a while for it to kind of click. And I think the first 4 or 5 games, we really weren't clicking that well. You know, we're still trying to learn it. But obviously, we're starting the last couple of seasons to pick up steam. So I think next year, once it's fully in and everybody's really accustomed to everybody, I think we're going to roll. We're going to pick up from the start, and our numbers are going to be a lot better. But it's been smooth sailing with the new coach. I absolutely love him. And I'm just blessed to be a part of the team, honestly.
Some pretty big things going on with that offense. And we'll get to some clips about he and his prolific teammates in a moment. But I asked Trevor, even in a loss this past week at Nichols, what did he take away from another big performance and another trip to the end zone?
Yeah, well, it obviously didn't go how we wanted to, but Nichols has a good ball club. They've got Chase 4K leading their way, and with that other good D-line that started us, you know, it's a tough team to play, but we're making strides. Cody Ogeron's had an unbelievable year. Not many people thought he was going to do what he was going to be able to do this year. And it's just exciting to see, you know, the offense starting to finally pick it up again. And, you know, next year we have me, Kyron, and Cody Ogeron coming back. So There's a bright future ahead for us, and I just can't wait to continue this weekend and just keep everything going.
And that's a perfect segue, right? Leading a horse to water. Sure, we'll drink. He just mentioned his teammates, Kyren Sutton, Cody Ogeron. And coming up, Trevor's going to give some sound on both of those guys. And maybe, just maybe, Beggy and Sutton have been a Southland Conference version of Chase and Jefferson at LSU. After all, both of the McNeese State receivers that we're talking about have 9 touchdown receptions on the season. Between them, they're over 1,800 yards through the air, so pretty impressive no matter what level of college football we're talking about. And I asked Trevor Beggy, is it a friendly competition with you and Sutton? How does that go down?
Yeah, no, me and Kyren have we were actually roommates my freshman year when we first got on campus here at McNeese. So we've had a really just a good connection all since we've been here. And, you know, Kyren's obviously, he's the leader. He's got 83 yards to 1,000-yard receiver. So I just have fun playing off of him. It's kind of like me and Griffin Hebert did when we were at STM. You know, he played off of me, I played off of him. So we're just having fun, man. We're really not even trying to worry about the records or anything like that, or touchdowns. We just like to both see us both having success, and we're just having fun with it.
And I'm having a lot of fun. Still hanging out for another few moments before we turn you over to Thursday night NFL football on 103.7 The Game. But it's good to be at the Taproom River Ranch, and it's good to run back some of the best we had from former STM Cougar Trevor Beggy earlier this week on the show. And he's mentioned several times Cody Ogeron. Of course, that's Ed's kid. And, of course, as Trevor tells you here, he's been able, Cody, to puff that chest out a good bit with the way the dad's team in Baton Rouge is playing.
Oh, man, he's walking around real high, real confident right now. But he knows that, you know, obviously the target's on their back now. But just like his dad, you know, he remains humble. He's blessed, you know, with everything that's coming to him. But he knows that, you know, the Tigers have a long way to go. But, you know, he's definitely happy right now. And I'm very happy for him, too. Coach Joe's a good guy. I met him a couple times. He's come to a lot of our games, down-to-earth guy, and I wish them the best success.
All right, just one more from Trevor on his current squad and this current season. I asked him all about that trip to Oklahoma State, and he got to play in T. Boone Pickens Stadium, got to play in Stillwater against the Big 12 squad, had an awfully good game, but you'll hear it toward the end of this clip. The competitor, he just can't tuck that away, but here was Trevor Beggy on his trip to play at Oklahoma State.
It was crazy, man. It was, it was big time football. You know, Big 12, we didn't really get much better than that. Maybe SEC, you know, Big 10, Big 2. But it was awesome, man. You know, to see Coach Mike Gundy, the coach over there with his son of hair, doing all that. And, you know, it was just big time football. The crowd was crazy. And I think I had like 5 catches for 70 yards. I had a chance to score, but I got down at the 1. So that's kind of eating me alive still to this day. But, it was just an awesome experience, and it was a really cool deal.
You know, there are some things just to shoot you straight. You don't even catch during the original interview, and on the run back, you will, and I just did. He went right to Mike Gundy in his hair. Just, you know, being in the same place as a guy with that hair was pretty cool. It's amazing what comes to mind when you're, what, 20, 21 years old? Hey, I'm about to be 35, and that still would be pretty impressive and cool to me. Hell of a mullet on Mike Gundy. All right, a few more clips from Trevor Beggy. These last few, all about his alma mater, the STM Cougars. And before we get to an STM Evangel preview, yeah, he blessed us with one of those. Here's Trevor Beggy on the current stud wide receiver for St. Thomas More. Beggy goes in on Jack Besh and how he is very different from the mold of recent STM receivers.
He is unbelievable. I mean, every time I saw him, I went to the North Vermillion game this past week. I was safe for only a little bit, but I got next to him and I was like, dude, you are big, man. And he's just, like I said, I called Coach Trevor a couple weeks ago and I told him, I said, Jack Besh is doing it different than anybody has ever done it. You know, like you said, his body type is like no one we've ever seen. Maybe Griffin Hebert, but Griffin Hebert wasn't as thick as he was. I mean, he's just dominating people. Like, he's dominating cornerbacks like we've never seen. And he's catching the ball and running the protection like me and Tiger did. So I told Coach that he might be the best to ever go through if he keeps doing what he's doing. He's a special talent, and I'm really excited to see what he can do the rest of this year and then his first senior year.
You know, respect to Jack Besh. So don't take this the wrong way, but sometimes we only know what we know, right? We only know what's in front of us, what's recently behind us. but there's probably a little bit of ways to go to catch up to Javon Walker. Just going to assert that. I thought it while we were interviewing Trevor live, but I'll put that out there. That's, you know, no casting aspersions at Trevor Beggy, but the guy did get to the league and play for quite some time. Pretty good body type on Javon Walker. But this kid, Besh, certainly special and certainly a Power 5 talent. All right, a powerful matchup at Cougar Stadium coming up in about 25 hours. Well, less than that. Close to 24 hours. It'll be STM Evangel, a 1-9 game only by seeding. I think by reputation, this is creme de la creme stuff in Division II this year. And Trevor Beggy took a look ahead to that matchup.
Yeah, when I saw that they were playing Evangel, it kind of brought back memories of when we used to battle them every season. Evangel's a good team. I know STM is not taking them lightly, coming from our playoff experience with them. It's gonna be an interesting game. I heard Evangel's coming up hot as of lately, so I'm very interested to see that. But I know STM's gonna become prepared, and it's tough to play STM at home, especially in the playoffs. So I'm expecting a good game, but I'm expecting the Cougars to come out on top.
Plenty of discussion this hour on that STM Evangel game. And that was a great discussion. It truly was. We had with Trevor Beggy earlier in the week. So in case you missed it, in case you've been derelict with going on demand at 1037thegame.com, wanted to make sure we kicked that your way. Now we got to thank our guests that came aboard the show on this Thursday, Billy Embody, go247.com. That one was Raging Cajun's theme when it came to recruiting. But Billy knows what he's talking about. Make sure you check that out, again, on demand at 1037thegame.com. Billy Embody was with us in the 4 o'clock hour. We did miss our guy, Gordy Rush, Planes, Trains, Automobiles, coming back from Denver, Colorado. Thank you, G-Man. We'll catch up with you next. Well, no, we won't. It'll be Thanksgiving. Gordy, I guess we'll talk to you in December, brother. But we did have a Louisiana Sports Hall of Famer, Dan McDonald, in the 5 o'clock hour, talking Cajuns football. And then Blaine Viator from 6 to 6:30, the best area and statewide matchups in round two of the select and non-select playoffs. So it's been a large show today, and here's the drill. You can listen to high school football on our sister station. If you would like to hear a ball game between Kaplan and Sterlington just north of Monroe, I invite you to turn it over to The Rewind. That's KVOL 97.7 FM and 1330 AM. Ray Parsh and company will have that. Safe travels, and God bless to my man Ray, all the way up there, basically in southern Arkansas. So Sterlington Kaplan will be on KVOL The Rewind, and on the other side of this hour break, the pregame show, and then kickoff Thursday night football. Thanks to all of our guests, you for listening, and the famous Clint D. My name is Ben Love, and you've been listening to Bumper Sports live from the Taproom River Ranch. Keep it locked in on 103.7 The Game.